come from?
I needed a song, and okay. It was there, and I was like, oh, everyone likes this one.
I was just like, okay. All right. You're going to get me beaten up by Wheeler if he thinks I'm playing this stuff on purpose.
Well, there are days
beat
where
you up. I might make fun of it.
Dave will take the time to like write out a playlist, and it's so nice. It makes things so easy, but then I forget to reference it, and then he's like, hey, you're throwing off the vibe I'm trying to curate.
It's a playlist. It's very much curated, so...
I liked it, for the record.
Okay, there you go. Fine.
That's what Rachel did then.
You're
was
the
for
boss.
You.
Yes, you know.
She knew.
That is our buddy Tamara from Clementine. It's been a while.
It has been a minute.
Yeah.
It has been, you know, making ice cream.
Still making ice cream?
Trying to.
All right.
Yeah. Having fun, you know, going into grocery stores, like starting to franchise, all kinds of ice cream world domination. Yeah. It's cool. It's exciting.
You ever wake up on a day and just go, I don't feel like making ice cream. You know
no,
what?
No, never.
Dave, it's like asking me if I don't want to watch baseball.
I certainly wake up and I don't want to do this crap. I'll tell you that for free. I'll tell you that for free. You effort can entertain yourselves for 4 hours.
No, I mean, like everyone, so we call them my $1 days, right? And so when I'm having a really bad day or I've had a really bad meeting or something, I tape a $1 bill on my office door and that tells the whole world that for $1, if you come in and give it to me, it's all yours.
Ha!
That's like my $1 days. So that's like how we communicate internally. Like, ooh, I may not want to go in there. Ooh, yep, she's going to lay it all on me if I go in. So that's kind of like my $1 days.
So
we all have those. We all have them. Not very often, but we all have
them. Yeah, we're talking about Katie, who we may need to take out. And but you and Katie have just like, I mean, it's like back when I was playing in bands in the early 90s and people were getting signed. We were like Seattle. And I don't know who were the new whatever, but you guys have really, really brought a lot of attention to St. Louis.
Yeah, well, you know, we both Katie and I have a lot of passion, a lot of drive, not just for the city, but for our product and what we make and what we do and why we do it. Like, there's a lot of love and passion there. You kind of, like, we're both, like, super ambitious.
Yeah.
Right? And we have big dreams and big goals and, you know, we're just kind of badasses.
Did you, from the very start, the first time you made ice cream, was this your goal or has it shaped itself as it went along, where you got to a point where you're like, I think I can score a touchdown in this. I think I can do this.
This has not always been the goal. It has definitely evolved over time. I mean, when I first started Clementine's, I had this really romantic notion. I was 38 years old, you know, no husband, no kids. And I said, I'm going to open this little ice cream parlor in Lafayette Square and I'm going to meet someone. I'm going to settle down. I'm going to have a little girl and I'm going to raise her in an ice cream parlor. Like that was the dream. Year one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Year two, that changed because of like the 7-8 hour lines that never stop in the summer. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to alleviate these lines. I've got to open a second parlor. And so my motivation to open a second one was to really alleviate the lines. And so then we got Demon opened. And then once that was opened and we had the same lines, that's when my marketing brand strategy professional life kicked in. And I said, oh, wait a second. I have something here. And then people just kept saying, hey, can you open a parlor in our neighborhood? And so it was really driven by people in St. Louis who lived in different neighborhoods who were like, hey, we would really love a Clementine's in our neighborhood. And so then we went to South City and then we went out to Lake St. Louis. It has really been evolved over time. And I'd probably say like Clementine's was very much still about me through parlor 3 or 4. Like I was creating, I wanted to do this thing. It was very Tamara myopic centered of like, creation and creating ice cream flavors and doing this, you know, and starting a family, you know, it was very myopic.
Yeah.
And then after that it just shifted to where Clementine's was not about me anymore. We were in COVID and it was all about my team and opportunities and building something great in St. Louis. And we started getting national press. And so it really did shift and kind of, it's its own almost like beast now. Like, it's just going. And so how do we direct it to where we maintain the high quality of product and we create more opportunities for people in St. Louis? I mean, it's crazy to think I have 260 employees now.
Wow.
That's 260 families that are
depending.
Supported and that depend on it. So it's Clementine's hasn't been about me for years. I may be the face and I may be the one to talk about it, but it's really about what can we build in St. Louis that's sustainable, from job creation to making this high quality product that really doesn't exist in the country very, very many places, because people deserve to have amazing ice cream. If you're going to eat it, eat the best thing that you can. Yeah, it's like changed over time. And then, you know, it was women coming to me saying, hey, I would love to start my own business and be in my community, but I don't want to build it and I don't want to make the product. Would you consider franchising? And so it was lots of inbound for those kinds of things that really said, oh, maybe I should do this to give other women an opportunity in their communities, right? Because they know their communities. It'd take me a lot longer to go build that community. Like, you know, it's taken me 12 years to build what I have here. And I was like, oh, I could give them opportunity to own their own business, and they're already in their communities, so let's do that, right? And same with grocery, right? Like, so many years, all these grocery stores have asked us for our ice cream, and I've always said no, because I wanted you to get them in our parlors, and we've had a small team. So it wasn't until I could expand my team and capacity that I said, okay, now we'll go in and we'll test it in grocery. And literally, we're blowing off the shelves in Schnucks. We're in 30 Schnucks, and it's the fastest growing center store product they've ever had, you know, and it's doing great, and it's not affecting our parlor sales. So it's a whole bunch of new customers that we've never served before. And so all these things just kind of have evolved and happened. And I think I'm just really good at seeing opportunities in the world, maybe manifesting them to some extent, right? To keep making great opportunities for our people. And then just like discovering which things to say no to, because no is a gift, right? You don't take every opportunity that comes your way. You pick the right ones and say no to all the other ones. I think I'm really good at that. Slow and strategic like growth is kind of been my jam.
Mm-hmm. Rachel's going to quit tomorrow. I can feel it. She's 10 feet to my left. I can hear the cogs.
Well, I do want to ask, I know you've done like a bunch of collabs with people in the St. Louis area and outside the St. Louis area. Maybe we should just focus on your favorite flavor, because then you don't have to get into like, oh, this was my favorite charity or whatnot. But what's been your favorite collaboration you've ever done?
Oh my gosh, my favorite collab ever. That's hard. That's really hard, because like in the early days, like if it wasn't for collaborations, like nobody would know about me. If it wasn't for Perennial, like who was really big and hot at the time, like saying, yeah, let's collaborate. Let's make cool beer ice creams, right? And then Four Hands early on with the Milk Chocolate Stout, and then with different restaurants doing, you know, it's collabs are like ingrained in like who I am, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where I go, I do them. I think my favorite right now is last year we did, and we're going to do it again this year, the Holiday Cookie Collection. And that is really doing this collab with these really amazing chefs from around the country to make really cool cookie ice creams, or cookie-inspired ice creams, based on the notion of like a cookie exchange party.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I'm really loving that, because I get to work with all these amazing chefs to do that. But like also like Kevin Lemp and I are like becoming super good friends, and we're collabing all the time. And, you know, we just did all these the citywide beer ice cream for their anniversary, and you know, we've got that, and then we're doing some stuff for the holidays, and so that's like really fun too. So I love doing the boozy ice cream collabs when I can. That's kind of a hard question. I don't know that I have a good answer for that.
What about on the other end? Have you tried something you're like, oh, this is terrible, I don't like this at all?
I did a collab early on with Bullyards, you know, the butchers in Maplewood. And we created, it was called Bitchin' Bovine.
I have a movie like that at home.
Well, you know, it's okay. So it's an ice cream flavor based on an Italian dessert called Sanguinaccio, which is a blood pudding. And I wanted to do a blood pudding ice cream. I know that sounds disgusting. Well, in the state of Missouri, you cannot buy pig's blood for food consumption. Damn. So we had to use beef's blood. So we used beef's blood to make this like Sanguinaccio ice cream. And it was like, it was so gaggy having to make it, but it was really interesting, and it was very minerally and stuff. And we sold out in 2 hours, but it was a collab with Bullyards. But like most people thought it was terrible, but like everyone had to come out and try it. So it was very successful, because we sold out in 2 hours. But, you know, I've never made it since. So There you go.
Do you just have a bunch of ideas floating around where you're like, that one might be a little too weird. We might have to wait on that one for a while.
Yeah. I mean, so the weird ice creams now will do for April Fools. So in the early days for April Fools, we would like create an image of the product, but we would never make it. But people would come to all the parlors on April Fools because they wanted it. So one year we did a hot dog water and hot dog ice cream. And like, we actually made it and people came out and they thought it was like so cool and it was so disgusting. Like, bleh, whatever. So now we did like a pickle. We did a toasted Rav ice cream on April Fool's. So now kind of the weird ice creams we kind of save for April Fool's Day. Sometimes we'll make them. Sometimes we won't.
We should do a collab together. And you should, on my 30th anniversary, come out with, this ice cream is what Dave Glover smells like.
I already know what you smell like, yeah, which is great.
We don't need scientists.
No, we don't need scientists. No. I could create that.
Yeah. By this afternoon, probably.
I'd have some ideas to initial out, for sure. Yeah. Based on, you know, because you're a clone, you wear a very distinctive cologne.
I don't wear any cologne. This is the way I was born.
Yeah.
I just emanate.
I popped out and the nurses are like, damn.
But your scent is very unique to you.
Yes.
Yeah, so thank you. Could definitely do that.
All right. All right. I think we made a lot of progress here.
With the disclaimer that I'm an engaged woman, but Dave and I are really good friends.
You got to make ice cream.
Yes.
What, you got to not make ice cream that smells like me?
That's right.
The Route 66, tell us about that collection.
Smells like Dave's spirit.
I like it. Yeah, so the Route 66, you know, it's the anniversary of Route 66. And so in true Clementine's fashion, like, we created a collection around it that's actually been like super, super popular. So we did a milkshake and fries, right? Based on, you know, what would a road trip down route? Because in college I did that. Like, I did a trip down Route 66 and I'm like, okay, you think back to all the places and things you eat and on whatever. So I came up with milkshake and fries. So it's dark chocolate covered potato chips in a really beautiful milk chocolate base.
Nice.
We came up with our cherry slush, which is like our sweet tart cherry sorbet, kind of based on a slurpy slushy type thing. And then we have our pretzel cookie dough, because that's like all the kind of crap that you eat when you're on a road trip.
Hell
but
yeah.
You put it all in ice cream and it's awesome. And then we have like, today we brought our Dr. Dirty Soda. You know, dirty sodas are really hot.
Yeah.
And who doesn't like a Dr. Pepper float type thing?
Love it.
So yeah, it's been really fun. You want to try some?
Yeah, let's do it.
Nah, it doesn't sound too awesome or anything.
And we have the Citywide. So the Citywide APA, the beer ice cream, I brought that today too. So you can try that. Let me give you that one first. What do you want to start with?
This is the most drunk you'll ever be, Kev.
Yeah, see, I'm not.
Let me try the. Just pick me one out. Whatever
here
you want.
Here is the pretzel cookie.
Love it.
Dough.
Yeah, that one sounds good.
Oh, perfect. Man.
Can I try the cherry slush?
Yeah.
Yeah, after me, though. Are you going to
have
the beer?
That's what you have?
We have.
No.
But it is now.
Yeah, you each have a spoon.
Yeah, look at that.
Oh, they can double dip. They always do.
So, I never asked you this.
That's how we do lunch every day anyway.
Yeah.
We just eat each other's food.
Obviously, your ice cream is better than any other ice cream, and you've told us how it's better. How did you know this in the very beginning?
So I came from the food industry, right? So I knew how big brands, what they did to bastardize their ice cream. And I've been making ice cream my whole life. So, like, I know what amazing ice cream tastes like. And I knew that my product was amazing, but it wasn't until I started traveling around the country and really trying other ice cream parlors and other ice cream out there that I found out that ours was like 10 layers above everyone else out there. And then we started like winning all these ice cream competitions. So you'd have like 600 to 800 blind of the country's best ice cream and gelato makers in one spot. Blind tasting ice cream, and we started winning every year. And not only one year, we won first, second, and third, and like everyone went crazy. Yeah. And so that's when I was like, oh, wait, no, we actually do make the best ice cream in the country right here in St. Louis. It's because we start winning all these competitions, and we win national competitions. And like our national competitors, like rarely do they ever beat us out. So
I mean, this is personal, but has like Breyers called and said, like, how many gazillions do you want for your place? I mean,
not yet. It will come. That's why I say not yet.
I know Breyer.
Do you? Okay.
Okay. Cool. Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. Happy Monday. That was a good show.
Yeah.
I mean, we're clearly dreaming Sunday, but it's a good dream show.
Sure. If you can dream it, you can do it.
That's right. Did you guys see the drama with Elmo?
Elmo.
Elmo drama.
What'd Elmo do?
Elmo did not say that he was rooting for the Knicks back during the NBA Finals. He said, Elmo just hopes everyone has a good time.
Okay.
And so Elmo's head was on a pike, on a float, during the New York Knicks celebration, and he was getting pelted with food. And so he came out for the World Cup and said, Elmo just wants to be really clear that he's rooting for the USA. I thought that was kind of cute.
It's cute that Elmo was sweet in making the distinction. Am I crazy that it makes me sad that they were
mean to Elmo?
Yes. Like, leave Elmo alone. I saw a TikTok. Someone was like, oh, day five of torturing Woody from Toy Story. And they're just like being mean to the doll. I don't think that stuff is funny. The doll feels that.
I'm sorry,
what if he comes awake whenever you walk out of the room, like in the real Toy Story?
I'm just more worried about the kids that see footage from the parade with Elmo's head on a pike.
Yeah.
What are we doing here, man? Can we all just, I don't know, grow up?
Yeah, kids don't. I mean, I think kids probably shouldn't be allowed on TikTok in general, but if sometimes they're just going to be able to get on there and they're going to see, you know, Woody getting tortured or Elmo getting beaten up or whatever, and it's like, that's sad. And by kids, I mean, you know, 35-year-old men.
What are they doing to
Woody?
Who get
sad to Elmo.
I don't know. It was I scrolled past it very quickly because I just was not interested in what was going on, but he was like, it was like day five of torturing Woody until he gives me answers. Like, they're trying to be funny, and they're, like, smashing his face into concrete. It was horrible.
Okay, but until he gives me answers actually is a little funny.
Yeah, but you don't have to be mean to the doll. I don't think that stuff is funny.
Especially when the whole premise is these dolls are alive.
Yeah,
yes.
These are living toys, and you're trying to get them to admit that he's alive, so you're like, you know.
Yeah.
Which is teaching, you know what, that's teaching kids the wrong lesson. If you want answers from somebody, you don't have to. You don't hit them. You ask them nice.
Right. The whole thing is messed up. Vic says, "When I was growing up, Grover was the dude. F Elmo.
Damn, Vic.
Elmo's very cute and nice.
Isn't Grover just a purple Elmo?
No, he's actually blue, and his voice is totally different. His nose is totally different."
So totally different dude.
Yes.
His vibe's different. His job's different.
He does have a very different vibe.
You're just thinking of they're both Muppets.
I'm sitting there. They're
both fuzzy in the same way.
It's both someone's hand moving.
I loved the monster at the end of this book. Did you ever read that to the kids?
Yeah. Yeah, scared me every time.
What? There's a monster?
It's at the end.
Of the book.
Oh, the Grover book?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
It's
we had
so
that
good.
One. Yeah.
We had a Tickle Me Elmo, which we gave to Phoebe too young, and she called him Melmo. Mm-hmm. And the
love
first
it.
Time she said, Melmo lives in closet. And so we put Melmo in the closet, and Melmo's never been out.
She didn't like how he talked?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not one single little
okay,
bit
the fact that he's...
did she like that he was
okay.
animated.
Okay.
Yeah, she's like, something's off about this guy.
I appreciate the diplomacy, though. She's like, I think, you know, this is just me. I think Elmo would really like it if he was in that closet behind a bunch of stuff.
DGS on KMOX. Time to check in with our pal Bernie Miklas. Hello, Bern.
Good afternoon. Great to be with you. I hope Father's Day and everything else was great for everybody.
Yeah, quite a weekend of sports between the World Cup and the College World Series and the Cardinals. Nick is getting married a little less than a year from now, and his bachelor party is going to be in Omaha at the College Baseball World Series, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah,
that's outstanding.
Yeah,
it really is.
But that was a great idea. So
it is.
So we dropped 2 of 3. We certainly could have been swept. Not the greatest weekend for us. Byrne, just give us your overall.
Well, the pitching, the starting pitching, which has been kind of in a state of gradual deterioration for a while now, it, to me, it just kind of brought everything home about, you know, it's a problem. There's no, everyone's an adult. There's no reason to pretend it's not a problem. It's a problem that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, frankly, not to sound dramatic, the Cardinals, you know, still sit in the top wild card spot. They still have a, you know, I think a decent chance of making the playoffs. But if they're going to, if they're going to sit by and watch this powder keg of a rotation get blown up repeatedly, forget about it. I mean, it's for whatever playoff chances they have, they're going to be badly damaged by letting this continue. And what I don't understand, and I know Kevin Wheeler agrees with me because we've all talked about it, Chaim Bloom and Ali Marmol showed a lot of urgency. We, you know, the Cardinals' offense in May was scored the second fewest amount of runs in the National League, and were down at the bottom in slugging and home runs and all these categories. I mean, the offense was just kaput. Well, what did they do? They started making a series of moves to strengthen the bench, to strengthen the bottom of the lineup, to have more flexibility for matchups. They brought a lot of guys up, and they've all contributed. And you know what? This is one of the best offenses in the major leagues in June. And a lot of it has to do with the moves that they made, the urgency that they showed to fix the offense. And Wheels, what I don't understand is where is the urgency to fix the rotation when they have three guys down there right now who were better, I think, than at least two of their starters. And I'm talking about Hunter Dobbins. I'm talking about Bryson Motz. I'm talking about Quinn Matthews. I mean, if they went into the system to improve within, to fix their offense, why are they being so, I don't know what the word is, cavalier about fixing their rotation?
I don't know. I asked the question of you guys on Friday, you and Matt Pauly, like, how is the Liberatore situation any different than the Gorman situation at this point?
Right.
Where they're similar age. In fact, they're the exact same age, same kind of Major League Baseball experience, and just falling off. They're not doing the job. One goes to Memphis, the other one's there. And you don't have to. This is the thing, Bernie. What we're talking about is not about like designating anyone for assignment or releasing anyone or losing any of your depth. We're talking about shuffling the chairs a little bit to get a reset for the struggling players and to give someone else an opportunity that at the moment could be better, but they can't be worse, right? It's hard to be worse than what you're getting from a couple spots.
Yeah. I'm, you know, before I joined DGS just now, I was, you know, getting in the late stages of finishing a column, and I just kind of made the point that you just amplified, which is, you know, if they sent down, they put Gorman down in the minors, not to rush him back on the field. And no, they care about him so much, and they still believe him in him so much that they actually said, no, right now you don't need to compete. Right now you need to totally regroup, and we're taking you away from the field. We're going to do what we did with Josh Baez last year at AA and some other candidates that have gotten results because of it. And we're going to basically put you in the hitting lab, and we're going to reset you, and you're going to change your swing, and you're going to find a better way, and you'll be better off, and blah, 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 blah. And Gorman was fired up about it. Because he even said, he was quoted, you know, by Derek Gould. He said, this is what I needed. This is what I want.
Yeah.
Well, why apparently is there this misguided loyalty to Liberatore, to where I have to assume some people in the organization think like it's punishing him to try to make him better, and that their solution is to let him stand out there and take beatings over and over again. Well, how is that caring about the guy? How is that helping him to get better? Yeah. I don't get it. And it's very inconsistent when you contrast that to their handling with Nolan Gorman.
Yeah, it's fascinating, too, because to make the move with Gorman, they had to make a decision on a player that they previously didn't think could play third base.
Right.
They had to change their mind on Blaze Jordan to say, you know what? we got to do this with Gorman and we'll figure it out with Blaze at third base, you know, whatever. So they made a pretty dramatic change in their evaluation of a player to make that move work. They don't have to make any kind of dramatic change of evaluation to put Dobbins into the rotation or Motts or whatever. Like, it doesn't change anything about, you know, it's not as dramatic a move as it is to say a guy that they thought as a first baseman DH to put him at third base in the major leagues. It's nothing's like that. These are guys that are starting in the minors and they would just be doing the same job in the majors.
Yep. And I'm just scratching my head over it. You know, I assume something will be done. I don't know when, I don't know why it's taken this long, but you have laid out the numbers about Libertor going back to last summer.
Yeah.
I did something similar over the weekend because I was curious. His last 27 starts going back to last July 11th. I mean, there's only two or three guys in Major League Baseball, starting pitchers, who have been just as bad or worse. So I'm not sure what we're trying to do here. I'm not sure what the objective is, because whatever they think they have planned or whatever adjustments they have made, it's clearly not working, because factually, statistically, he's one of the worst starting pitchers in baseball over his last 27 starts, and he's getting worse instead of getting better. So
yeah.
Am I the one taking crazy pills here?
I don't think so, man. And you know, it's not like they can point to the under the hood stuff and say there's hope. The under the hood numbers are actually worse than the real numbers, which means he's been lucky. So these are his numbers. That 5.23 ERA is lucky. That's with him having good defense behind him, helping him out, and good fortune other than that. Because all of the expected numbers are worse than that. And I mean, look, he gives up more hard contact than almost any starting pitcher in baseball. It's pretty close. He's near the bottom. He's in the bottom four or five.
Right.
Not a great
Something
thing.
Something else.
Hopefully there's a change in that regard. I don't know. I'm with you. I don't know what it takes to make that change. But they did a lot on offense in a very short amount of time. So hopefully we're reaching that point where they go, okay, we just doing the same things, not going to fix the player or help the team. And really, I'm not treating this like, okay, you're in contention, you got to sell out. That's not how I'm treating it. I'm also treating this in what's best for the player who's struggling. And it's not best to just go out there and keep getting your brains beaten in.
So for Libertor, if you guys were running the team, would you put him into the pen where he could be helpful? Or do you think he's too far gone now? He needs to go down to AAA and just go to the lab.
I mean, I think putting him in the pen would be okay to try. But I think for his long-term pitching health, I think something dramatic needs to be done to try to get him back on track. I mean, to really, really kind of rebuild him on the fly, which a lot of teams do with their pitchers. I mean, this is a pretty standard practice, you know?
We got to find a fastball that works, because he doesn't have one, and he never has had a fastball that works because he doesn't command it well enough. So if the pitch characteristics, you know, the spin rates and the way it carries or moves or rides, if that isn't good enough and you can't command it either, then all versions of the fastballs that he throw are just ineffective. So find a fastball that works. I wouldn't have him throwing five, six pitches. He should throw three at this point. If you can't command three, you can't command six. And I would argue, Byrne, I agree with you, the bullpen wouldn't hurt, but I would go for the demotion first just to try to fix it and see how it goes. And if the bullpen's an option or a need later, then yes. I mean, obviously, I think we've seen he can do that. Because when he pitched in the bullpen, Byrne, he wasn't throwing six pitches. He was focusing basically on two or three.
Right. And I was looking at all his pitch stuff today, and, you know, you're spot on. I mean, he has had some success with the curveball, but that's gone bad lately.
Yeah.
You know, I was just looking at the batting average and slugging percentages, the actual and the expected. For most of these pitches, the numbers are horrifying, you know? So again, I just don't get it. And I like Libby, and I want Libby to do great. I mean, we're not against them. The irony is, like, guys like Wheeler and me and Dave Glover and so many others, like, we want to see Libby become a horse, man.
Yep.
We don't want to see him keep, you know, getting caved in on the mound. It's not doing him any good or the team any good. So I do think that one thing about the Cardinals, whether it's managers or it's general managers, there's just been this this habit of like misguided loyalty where they think they're standing by their guy when actually they're letting their guy down by allowing him to continue to take beatings. I mean, I don't understand the psychology there. Just like when we asked Ollie last week about Riley O'Brien, and you know, clearly Riley O'Brien is not, he's a shell of the pitcher he was early in the season, and I feel bad for him. But they're kind of in denial about it. They're absolutely in full denial about it. And it doesn't matter what happens, like that thing yesterday, which was sad in a way. I mean, I'm glad he had the fight and the nerve to escape that. But these implosions in games with something on the line, they continue to happen over and over and over again. But when you ask Ollie about it, and listen, Ollie was pleasant. It's not like he was trying to snap my head off, right. But he just shut down this, any idea that, you know, they need to maybe, you know, give him a breather, try someone else at closer. It's like, no, he's our closer. He's our, okay.
Yeah, the vibe I get as a fan is that the Cardinals are never out of it. They can and will fight back, and they're never comfortable with the lead. Like, I'm never comfortable with the lead. We have 6-run lead. And Stanek's ass gets in there, and you're just like, okay. Well,
and this month, he's been better than a bunch of other guys. I mean, I can't remember Bern, I don't think it was in the group with you. I think it was the KMOX sports guys, the other guys that we have a little text string. But, like, Riley O'Brien has nearly a 7 ERA since May 1st.
Well, it actually started April 25th.
Okay, I mean, like, it was that first great month, and since then, it hasn't been good.
No, and he, his ERA over that time is, it's like 770, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And his strikeout rate in his first, like, 13 appearances was 33.3%.
Wow.
Since April 25th, it's like 19%.
Yeah.
You know, and the numbers on that sinker and now the slider, the numbers, no one could touch the sinker before or hardly the slider.
Yep.
or the sweeper. And now those pitches have become very easy to hit. So, I mean, it's all there. All you got to do is enter the right search terms at StatCast.
Yeah.
And you can see the before and the after picture. It's pretty stunning, actually. But hey, everything's good. Nothing to see here.
Yeah. Hey, Bern, tell us about Sliga, please. Welcome back to UGS. A few minutes shy of 3 p.m. A couple of fun facts for you. The Wright brothers made a deal that they would never fly together so that at least one of them would continue their work in the event of a fatal crash. There was only one exception in 1910. They shared a 6-minute flight near Dayton, Ohio, with Orville piloting and Wilbur the passenger.
Hmm.
I've always heard that only one of them really did anything.
Oh?
I forget which one it was. One was just sort of like that brother.
The other one was just following the other one around.
Yeah, just like, I don't feel like flying today.
Whatever he said.
Ernest Hemingway set a world record for fishing in 1938 by catching 7 marlins in one day.
That's awesome, man.
That guy was something else.
Yeah, he's cool. I like reading about him.
Pickup game of pickleball took a violent turn in Florida recently when a woman assaulted a stranger by hitting him in the head with her paddle multiple times.
Ooh.
She's now facing several felony charges.
I can't think of anything less threatening than being attacked with a pickleball paddle.
Yeah, fighting those kindergartners.
If you get hit on the side.
Oh, yeah.
Like with the side of it? Like if you turn it.
Sure.
If you flip it and then crack it like that, that probably hurts.
Yeah, I doubt she's hitting him with the webbing.
Yeah.
I did not see webbing. It coming, though.
It's like that's a right. ping pong
paddle. Like the paddle part.
It would actually hurt pretty bad if someone like whacked you in the head with that.
I think that's what I'm saying. I think the wind resistance with the paddle part would slow it down too much. But if you turn it to its side and slice it, oh, that's going to hurt.
I thought this was interesting. They did a study of how many Americans were meal people and how many were snackers. Like, everyone's both, but overall. And 79% of Americans say that they are way more snackers than meal people. And that they can go 3 or 4 days without eating a meal.
No, thank you. I guess I'm in the other category.
I like to snack. I like it. The holiday season, a lot of times we'll just do like a charcuterie situation for instead of a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
For like New Year's or something. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I'm still eating. Calorically, it's like I'm having two meals. But it's all technically snacks.
Ironically, Rod Stewart almost fainted while performing Young Turks Friday night in Utah. He had to receive a breathing treatment from an oxygen tank, which he had sitting off stage.
Aww. Mm. You should take it easy.
Yeah, they should.
I mean, if you have the oxygen tank ready to go, like, maybe that's a sign.
Yeah.
Well, you could take a break for a while.
It'd be really funny if he did that one right after Do You Think I'm Sexy?
I saw a thing over the weekend. I see these things all the time, but this one got me. Would you rather always have crumbs in your bed or always have wet sleeves?
Crumbs,
yeah. Crumbs.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Deal with the crumbs.
Yeah. Yeah, just kick them away. That's fine.
Yep.
Yeah, kick it under the fridge.
Wet sleeves.
Wet sleeves.
There's nothing. There's few things are worse than that. And you guys are lucky because you don't have to, like, take your makeup off after work or anything.
Well, some of us.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I, like, wash my face after work, and in the wintertime, you got those long sleeves on. It's like, ugh, gotta roll these up. And keeping your hair away from your face while you do that, that's a bummer, too.
Yeah, same.
You don't understand my struggle, is what
No,
I'm
I
saying.
Do not.
I don't
Kevin's
know.
Just learning for the first time makeup comes off.
I was just joking that, like, disappears. Oh, no, no. I was like, we also take our makeup off.
I don't know why, but I used a shower cap a lot when I lived at home with my mom and dad. I think it was because I was so obsessed with getting my hair feathered.
You sure. Know? Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to do that. You don't want to heat damage it. Yeah.
Did you ever have a perm? Because you can't get those wet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know my perm story. That's when I first knew I was going to be bald. Because my first girlfriend, Tammy, had an aunt who was a beautician, as we mm-hmm. called it at the time. And I had pretty long hair, like, you know, down to my shoulders. And I was picturing Sammy Hagar from the cover of 20th Century Man. And it all seized up to into a little cotton ball on the top of my head about the size of a tennis ball.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And I'm like 17, and her aunt says, well, I guess we're all going bald at some point.
Dang.
That hurt.
Yeah, that's not nice.
No good.
The 70s were cold, man.